with Hashem's help, we're in the second chapter of the first section of Ali Shor. We started learning about Tefillah, and the last time we learned together, we brought Reb Chaim on the Rambam to write. There are two aspects of Tefillah. The one which we spoke about last time was the awareness that you, when you daven, you bring yourself to a recognition that you're standing before Hashem. And that is the context of davening, of the awareness that a person must be in. The second one is the words of davening that what a person says. And in the earlier generations, we spoke about how they reached a very high level. Now we're trying to be very practical. What are the words? Nusach ha-tzfila tiknu anshei kneset ha-gadola. We're going in history to look back how the events worked. There was the first temple, and then there was the exile, and then there was the generation of Jews who returned to build the second Beit HaMikdash. That generation incorporated Nevi'im. The Anshei Knesset Gedola was an era at the beginning of the pre-Bayit Sheni and the beginning of Bayit Sheni. That's really when Oral Torah started. Until then it was the Written Torah. Ezra and Nehemiah is where the book of the Written Torah ends. And that era, that period of the Anshei Knesset Gedola who closed the Tanakh, they sealed the Tanakh. They said these 24 books are in and anything written from now on is not part of it. So if you have other books like Sefer HaMakkabim or Josephus or anything which was written afterwards, that doesn't make it into Tanakh. And then the Oral Torah started. And in the first books that they wrote, I mean the first era, when you're talking about the Oral Torah starting to be written down, and this is way before the Mishnah of course, one of the first books that was written down was the Siddur. And the people who wrote that were the group of people who included Ezra HaSofer and the Nevi'im of his generation. 120 Zikanim altogether. Reb Chaim of Volozhin in his book Nefesh HaChaim in the second section, some people are very familiar with the fourth section which speaks about Talmud Torah and the greatness of Torah, and it's very important to learn that at some point in Yeshiva. Rabbi Saraf speaks of it often in order to build the awareness of the greatness of what the Torah that you're learning has an effect. And that's the fourth section of the book. In the second section of the book he speaks about Tefillah, the power of davening, what koach your Tefillah has. When you're speaking those words, come to Shemaim, what power they have down. And he goes on a bit of an explanation there about the Siddur. And this is a quote from him. In truth, in the depth of the inner world, the intention behind Tefillah, we aren't able to get to very high levels according to what the Anshei Knesset Gedola intended. And we're not able to fathom what they intended when they put those words together in their depth, according to their level. Even that which we have explanations of in earlier generations, perhaps like the Abarbanel, later generations like the Arizal, which are way beyond intentions that had been written about until him, nevertheless, that's not even a drop in the ocean if you wish to understand the depth of what the Anshei Knesset Gedola they had in mind when they were writing it down. There is no one in this world who was ever able to write a tikkun, something where you can say a phrase which can have such a great effect, like the Anshei Knesset Gedola, which they wrote it down, and that's the Siddur. When you daven the words of the Siddur, it has an effect which is way beyond the explanation that you could understand. And every time you daven, you're having an effect on the higher world. Just to give a mashal for this, if you imagine that in Shamayim, there's an enormous, enormous, enormous chavit, a barrel, full of blessing. That blessing might be Parnassa, that blessing might be health. If you want to talk about this era, that's an important thing that one would think of. It could be insight in Avodat Hashem, insight in knowledge. It's an enormous, 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 enormous container. Now, that container has lots of little strings attached. And those strings are very thin, you can hardly see them. But they come all the way down, they're attached to your words. And whenever you say a word, you pull a little bit on that string. That when you say a prayer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for something in this world here, you're able to tug at that string, and it tips that enormous utensil slightly, and the blessing comes down. Now, which word do you say? So there are some words that you say that won't have the desired effect. There are some times that you don't say a word you don't even understand, and it has the desired effect. And there are some times where it's more your intention that makes a difference. You don't always know exactly. There are some words that don't work and some words that do. When Chazal came to write a formula, a potion, if you like, for a very specific words that are those key words that can pull and tug
on that enormous crate of blessing, that container of blessing, these are the very specific words. And like I spoke about the last time we learned, even if you don't understand the words that you're saying, like a magic potion, you know, a magic formula, if you don't understand the words, they nevertheless, as long as you have the intention in general that you're talking to Hashem to bring blessing down into the world, they're able to have an effect and bring down the blessing when you say those words. So whilst it is crucial for us to learn the commentary on the Siddur and understand what it means, that's an essential avodah, which I'll speak about in a second. But at the same time as that, you have to be aware of the greatness of what you're doing goes beyond those specific words. And you are having an effect. So if someone on the other side of the world is not religious, and you pray for them to come close to Hashem, your words up in Shemayim can bring down blessing and can tilt their heart towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because Hashem tied our mouths to that higher force. And even if you're not aware of it, and when you're davening for the Mashiach to arrive and the Beit HaMikdash to be rebuilt, every Jew in each era adds more and more and more, tilting that enormous vessel in Shemayim to come down. Now very specifically, people say that they don't have an understanding of davening and they feel davening is dry. It's from both of the factors that we spoke about. Sometimes it's they do know what the words mean, but they don't have an awareness of standing before Hashem. That's a different avodah. That's more of an avodah of emunah in Hashem, recognizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your life, looking for Hashkacha Pratis, being aware that you're standing before Hashem, not only in davening, but in many, many other aspects of your life. That's one type of avodah. But even someone who does have an awareness of Hashem, when he does come to daven, he has that recognition, you still, if you don't know what you're saying, it's very hard to hold on to the intention all the way through. And therefore it's crucial, and I'm saying this now, especially before Rosh Hashanah, that it's valuable to take out time during a break or even during Seder, if necessary for the next few days, to go through the Machzor and have an overview that you're very familiar with the main content of everything that you're saying. So when you come to davening on Yom Neraim, you're not figuring out what the words are as you're going along. I'm not talking about very specific words. It could be that here and there you won't know what does Hadar Gaon Uzecha exactly mean. But you have a definite understanding of what the content of that phrase is. You have that knowledge. But not that you're learning davening while davening, where you're reading through and goes, what does that mean? What does that mean? And you're trying to figure it out. You shouldn't be doing ulpan. Oh, the root of that word is this, that probably means that. You should not be doing that in the middle of davening. But rather, already have an awareness of what the words are that you can move beyond. I often have noticed people reading books, which they're reading for the first time, which speak about Rosh Hashanah. And I'm thinking, they're probably just getting familiar with that concept, but it's very unlikely they'll be able to daven about that concept on Rosh Hashanah. Meaning they're learning about Rosh Hashanah on Rosh Hashanah, it's a little bit too late. It's lahavdil, elev avdalas, but it's a little bit like if you would be invited to exquisite meal, and there are very, very specific guidelines of how your which fork goes on which side and which spoon and where the napkin serve it. And there's like all these rules, right? So if you come down to the meal and like everyone's leading accordingly and their right finger is up at the right time, they know exactly what to do, right? And you're like, 1 second, let me read the rules. And you're sitting there and everyone else is doing it properly and you're busy like reading through. Okay, the right pinky has to go up at a 45 degree angle when you're drinking and, oh, okay, first pick up the cup and then do it. And you're busy reading the rules, it's likely that you'll mess up at that time. But if you already have read the rules ahead of time and you're already familiar with it, so when you come to have the meal, you're already comfortable. So say it to Rosh Hashanah. If someone's figuring out what Rosh Hashanah is about on Rosh Hashanah, then it's better than reading the New York Times. Man, it's already a step forward. You're taking Rosh Hashanah seriously. However, it's unlikely that you'll be able to tap into Rosh Hashanah because you're still figuring it out. So rather, a person should take out time beforehand, read through the Machzor, become very familiar with it. That's about Rosh Hashanah. Separately to that, Shmona Esrei as well. Again, you don't have to have an exact translation of every single paragraph throughout Pesukei de Zimra to know exactly what it means. But you certainly have to have an understanding of the context. Each perek that you're saying, before you say it, it should already be in your mind that you know the content of this perek. And if you're saying a bracha, you know what you're specifically thinking of as you start that bracha. It shouldn't be that a person is getting to a bracha and he's trying to figure out what this bracha is about in a good case scenario that he's thinking. Right? And that was already an assumption. So a person outside of davening, not during davening, out of davening, should be going through the siddur. And if you're looking for a New Year's resolution for Shana, this is a suggestion if it's something personal to you, where you take a commentary on the siddur. It could even be the article footnotes if you have an article siddur. That's also valuable. Just to read through those, but not during davening, but another time. And make sure that you go through and understand that anything which is inspiring to you, and you make a note about anything you want to write about on the side, you can take note of that. In English, there's an excellent book by Rabbi Schwab on Prayer. There's also another book, which is a different style and also very valuable, and also in English, by Rabbi Dr. Eli Mook, which is what Mook's shul is named after, Rabbi Mook. There's also in Hebrew, if you have Hebrew at your fingertips, then Rav Pinkus has a commentary on the Siddur as well. It's very inspiring. And there are many others, including Siach Tzvi by my great-grandfather, which is also a winner if you're of the same family and you love reading your great-grandfather's works. But it's yet to come out. It will be coming out, Rez Hashem, in about 4 months. It will be coming out, Rez Hashem, in the new edition. But either way, going through the Siddur with a commentary, not during davening, will enable you that when you come to daven, you won't be learning davening, but you'll be actually davening, because you're already familiar with the content, you'll be familiar with the concepts, and you're able just to talk to Hashem about it. Having already familiarized with yourself, you're just able to talk directly. Back in the day, before yeshiva, I'm not suggesting that one activates all their thoughts that they know from pre-yeshiva, but sometimes they just pop into your mind, and you're like, where did that come from? But now that I thought of it, what Avodah Hashem message can I take from it? I'm not suggesting you go through every movie you've ever seen or probably ever seen and say, what was the message for Hashem for me from that? Rather move on, and there's a lot more messages you'll find in Chumash and in Navi and in Mishnah. You'll find a lot more. But if it happens to be that it pops into your mind some scene from some movie from the past, and you ask yourself, like, if that's come to mind already, what can I learn from that? So it's something just flashed into my mind at this moment. And I won't say where it's from, but if anyone has watched it, you may recognize it. There was one scene there. There was one scene there where someone had come out of a courtroom, I think, and then there were different reporters who were coming and interviewing them. So one reporter comes and says, "Who are you? What's your name? And why are you here?" And then all that reporter says, "Do your homework, do your research. What are you asking those basic questions for?" And then all other reporters pushed them away. And I remember that scene, Harut Bilibi, like it etched in my mind of that concept that, of course, the reporter does a lot of background work before he comes and just goes and interviews the person. He's done so much background research. Now, you're coming to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah. If you're coming there and saying, okay, what is this about? Why am I here? What do these words mean? Do I even believe in God? Then, oops, you should have done a lot of that work beforehand. You should do your research before you come. But if you come and stand to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're already prepared, and you've done your research, and you know what you're coming to daven for, and who you're davening before, towards, then you're going to have a lot great, much greater effective Rosh Hashanah. That's regarding the greatness of the Siddur that Rav Chaim of Vilozhin writes about. And at the same time, I'm adding that one has to break it down and be very clear. Although you can't reach these high, lofty levels, it's important to know that there's a lot of depth behind it. But whatever level we can get to and you can connect to, it's an important Kabbalah. So whether you make that your official Rosh Hashanah resolution, or whether you do that just Derech Agav and you make that a Seder that you do on Motzei Shabbos once a week, or you have a certain section of davening that you research, write up about, and then throughout that week have Kavanah on that particular section, you do that for a couple of years and you've got the whole Siddur under your fingertips, that could be a very valuable thing to do. Hasidur hu sefer ha'amok v'hakasher biyoter mikol sifrei Torah shel Baal Peh she'inchilunu rabbeteinu Chazal. It's a very powerful statement. The Siddur is one of the deepest and hardest books of all of the oral Torah that the rabbis have given us. Now you wouldn't think that. You would think, well, it's pretty simple. I can read it and translate it. Why is it so deep? Ein lanu ela litfalel b'meshach shanim b'metinut v'hitbonanut mruba v'lizaher mihitlavut chitzonit she'ein ima machshava. So he's not saying, but I'll try and add, why is it one of the hardest books? Because of its simplicity. Because it looks like it's just Psalms, just reading Psalms, then you don't get the depth of when you look in and you say, how do I connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through this? Why did Chazal put this over here and that over there? What's the order? How does that connect to me? You're obligated in having an experience in davening when davening. And there's a danger that a person just makes it rote. And that's why it's one of the hardest books, because it can so easily fall into rote and you miss the experience. That's one danger. Now here is another danger. Baruch Hashem, this isn't something so common here in this yeshiva. Thank God I haven't seen it. But it is common that you see here and there where people daven very actively. They're very active in their davening. Sometimes there's punching in the air that takes place. Sometimes there's trying to catch a rainbow as they're trying to talk. And there's a lot of actions going on. And no one knows what's going on in that person's inner world. It's between them and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's likely that the calmer a person is and the more inner work that's taking place, then the less external action a person needs. Now, it's not our place to judge anybody, and it's just not relevant. It's not relevant at all. And there's a machlokas that the Shulchan Aruch brings and just says everyone should do what works best for them, whether a person should move during davening or not. Should a person shuckle? It doesn't say should a person punch in the air and lift up their hands, but it does speak about shokalim. And it brings the pasuk korat v'taitamana mikmoch Hashem. There's a pasuk that says that all my bones will sing the praise of Hashem. But there's a question whether one should or one shouldn't. So I'm going to give a guideline, which I think is a true guideline, and then everyone can judge themselves about whether one should move during davening. Obviously, if the person next to you is annoying you, then you should move. Whether you should shokal during davening, like that action. So, the goal of davening is that there's an inner movement. Meaning that you're thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you feel yourself focused on the fact you're standing before Hashem, and you're taking a step forward in your avodah Hashem. That's the goal. Now, for some people, if they don't have a head start, a kick start, where they have an external movement, then it's hard for them to get into their own inner world and their own inner kavanah. And for them, the act of shakarim is a productive act. They start like this, they start getting moving, and then through that external act of moving, then for them their inner world starts moving as well, and they're able to have kavanah, and it engenders them to have kavanah and talk to Hashem and davening, and it's very productive. For some people it's exactly the opposite. They stand to daven, and there's a need for the inner world to take action, and they feel uncomfortable about that for whatever reason. It's just not happening. So they can't just stand there and not do anything, because they're not doing any inner movement. So then they get all active on the outside. And then, it covers up for them. They don't have to do any inner work, because a lot of external work takes place. And you ask them afterwards, how is davening? He goes, it was a good davening. It was almost like 6 pounds every movement. And I really built myself there all the way through davening. Because there was the external movement that was taking place, which was at the expense of the internal movement. Now, there's no way anyone can tell you what works for you. Only you can tell yourself. And so I'm suggesting, try davening without movement. Try davening standing absolutely still. And see what happens. If you find that you have more kavanah that way, and it's beneficial for you, and that's a better way for you to daven. And if you find awkward and it's hard for you to focus, it's hard for you to have kavanah, then try shokaling. And then try shokaling and see what happens. Test each of them out. See where you actually have more kavanah. And I would even suggest trying it for a few days. Because the first day you do it, a lot of the thoughts are just, am I having kavanah? Am I not having kavanah? Is this working? So do it for a few days, just that you move past that point of checking if it's working, and until it just happens, naturally. And then you'll test yourself. But don't do that, you just kind of do whatever you've done, and you don't think either way if it's working for you or not working for you. That would be without thought. And our whole goal of Avodah Hashem is to do it with thought. So everyone should try out by themselves whether shoveling for them does increase their kavanah, doesn't increase. That's the guideline of how to tell. So he warns against it. One should be careful from an external enthusiasm which is not accompanied by intentions. He doesn't say you should be careful and not do it. He just be careful if that's at the expense of thought. It could be the expense of thought. We'll finish this chapter, and there's a shem tomorrow, we'll move on to a new one. Don't look at a long davening as a righteous act. It's not necessarily tied together. There is no connection, there may be, but it's not essentially tied together. That the length of one's davening means it's a higher level of kavanah. Because sometimes it's like someone who has a hard time learning. And because they're struggling in their learning, and they struggle and struggle and struggle, then to get through a certain piece of Gemara takes them a lot longer. And it could be that someone who's davening, they struggle in having kavanah, and therefore they have a lot of time of like trying to have kavanah, and because of that they have a long davening. But it's not necessarily an ideal. It could be that if they would be able to have kavanah in a smoother way, a more immediate way, and they could just talk to Hashem more freely, they would be able to daven to Hashem much quicker and much more smooth. And here again, the same guideline that we just gave. Some people having a long davening is actually effective. Their mind is not distracted, and they're able to get to a level of kavanah which is beneficial. Some people are having a long kavanah, having a long davening, they just think more about other things. Their mind is distracted much more, and for them to have a quicker davening, they would be able to stay focused. They'll be able to stay online. It's like if you try and bounce a ball too slowly, where is it going? You lose the rhythm. If you bounce a ball and just keep it bouncing, you're able to keep the rhythm going. For some people, when they daven at a fast pace, right, obviously slow enough that they're able to think about what they're saying, but fast enough that you're moving from bracha to bracha and able to have a focus on each bracha as you're going, it's a much more effective davening than trying to have a slower pace and daven slower, but then that gives opening for lots of other thoughts to come in. There's no, again, no clear guideline. It's up to everyone to test themselves. But check yourself that it's working. If you daven a very quick davening, it's the expense of kavana, go slower. If you daven a very long davening, at the expense of the kavana, then go slower. Each one according to whatever works, right? Whatever I said there. Whatever works. Check yourself always, is what I'm doing productive? And you could change from, I wouldn't say day to day, but period to period. You go through a certain period in your life and you're doing one way, another period you're doing another way. It doesn't have to be, I'm a slow davener, I'm a fast davener, I'm a shocker, not a shocker. It could be in different periods, you have different things that work for you. You always have to be checking in, is this working, is this working? And that's the guideline by long or slow. And his final advice is, it's a good habit that a person gets into to daven from a siddur. That's a guideline. To daven from a siddur, because there are certain times where a person thinks that by closing the eyes they can have more kavana, and those are the times why by closing one's eyes and they daydream and they think of other things. But by davening in a siddur, you're always able to immediately refocus. And if you think about something else, but you're looking at siddur and you're following the place, so you have to be there. You have to be where you are. It's easy to daydream when you're not looking. It's hard to daydream when you're keeping the place. And therefore, even though some people will say that they can focus more when their eyes are closed, but the long-term benefit of davening in the siddur and following the place is usually a greater benefit of a overall kavana throughout all of davening. And then he just adds what we mentioned beforehand, that it's worthwhile having a siddur at a different time, not during davening, with the commentary that you go through and learn. So we've ended our first round of davening now. God willing, we will be able to have another session on davening again, where we'll go into a lot more depth of how to have kavanah. But as an opening, as an introduction of making davening an avodah for yourself, that was a good first stop. Yisharkoach.